The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Parliament has been paralysed for months after what has been the longest session of a minority parliament in Canadian history. That's why this morning I advised the Governor General that we need a new session of parliament. She has granted this request, and the House will now be prorogued until March 24th. Over the holidays, I've also had a chance to reflect and have had long talks with my family about our future. Throughout the course of my career, any success I have personally achieved has been because of their support and with their encouragement. So last night over dinner, I told my kids about the decision that I'm sharing with you today. I intend to resign as party leader, as Prime Minister, after the party selects its next leader through a robust, nationwide, competitive process. Last night, I asked the President of the Liberal Party to begin that process. This country deserves a real choice in the next election, and it has become clear to me that if I'm having to fight internal battles, I cannot be the best option in that election. A new Prime Minister and leader of the Liberal Party will carry its values and ideals into that next election.
And that was Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau outside his residence announcing he will be resigning as leader of the Liberal Party. After weeks of mounting pressure, his decision comes just weeks after his own finance minister quit over the looming Trump tariffs. I'm joined now by Stevie O'Brien, a former government advisor to the Trudeau government. Stevie, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Where did it all go wrong for Justin Trudeau?
So I think there's two. There's two points. Broadly speaking, after COVID, Prime Minister Trudeau and the Liberal Party failed to adjust to the new mood of the nation, sort of a global mood, less optimistic, a lot more anger, a lot more stress about affordability and housing, where the conservative leader was very successful in sort of tapping into that, had some very catchy slogans, and really caught the mood of the nation better. Trudeau was a little bit behind in pivoting. So that saw the decline in the polls over the last year and a half and losing several, I think, four or five by-elections across the country in critical places. But as you already mentioned, I think the straw that broke the camel's back was the departure of Chrystia Freeland, the finance minister, in mid-December. Once she was able to sort of criticize Trudeau and she was able to step up, it really encouraged or gave cover to the rest of caucus to do the same. She was deputy prime minister and a longtime supporter, considered his most trusted advisor. So that was, if she was not supportive anymore, then I think a lot of other members of caucus felt that they couldn't go forward.
Now, he talks there about a new Liberal leader and prime minister leading the party into the next election. I mean, is that what's going to happen? Because he also mentioned Parliament would be prorogued. So will there be a new prime minister?
So we're waiting to hear from the Liberal Party executive what the rules for the new the leadership race are going to be. I anticipate it's going to be a fast and furious race among a small set of people in February, hopefully choosing a new leader in March to provide a speech from the throne when Parliament resumes at the end of March, anticipating that probably the opposition parties will quickly bring down the government with a vote of non-confidence, and we'd go into an April or May election.
But there would be another person who would become prime minister. Would there be enough support to elect another Liberal as prime minister for that short period?
So the way that the party constitution works, the party membership will choose a new leader of the party who will de facto become the prime minister, may only be prime minister for a couple months while the election carries out, and then the election will result in hopefully, from my perspective, another Liberal prime minister, but according to the polls, probably Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre will take over.
Now, you mentioned that the finance minister, Chrystia Freeland, resigned over, I presume, Trudeau's attitude to the threat of Trump tariffs. Now, Trudeau went to Mar-a-Lago and was maybe not assertive enough in his attitude there, but he's not the only cabinet minister from Canada who made that pilgrimage.
No, he was accompanied by another leadership contender, new finance minister, former public safety minister Dominic LeBlanc. So Canada-US relations are really critical at this time. So it is a very awkward and unfortunate time to be focusing internally on Liberal Party, leadership race, when we really should be looking south of the border to address the tariffs, to have a unified Team Canada approach to those negotiations, like we did with the first Trump administration and the renegotiation of a free trade deal. So the timing, really, of all of this couldn't be worse.
Now, the question of Trump and, referring to Canada as the wannabe 51st state. In fact, after Justin Trudeau's resignation on Truth Social, he said, many people in Canada love being the 51st state. The United States can no longer suffer the massive trade deficits and subsidies that Canada needs to stay afloat. Justin Trudeau knew this and he resigned. If Canada merged with the US, there would be no tariffs. Taxes would go way down. They'd be totally secure from the threat of the Russian and Chinese ships that are constantly surrounding them. Together, what a great nation it would be. What do Canadians actually think of that kind of stuff?
I think the vast majority of Canadians are very concerned with that sort of language, as I imagine people in Panama and Greenland, where similar comments have been made, are also concerned. For Canada, the U.S. is by far our greatest trading partner, and we have shared North American security considerations. So it's going to be a fine line, whoever the next prime minister is, and for Trudeau, while he remains prime minister, to do that dance where you do not want to offend Donald Trump, but you have to stand up for Canadians. You can't just sort of let sovereignty go. So to be able to be a strong leader standing up for Canadians, yet still manage to diplomatically negotiate a favorable trade deal, which are going to make such an impact on the Canadian economy, it's going to be a very tough order.
Yeah, but don't bullies only understand other bullies, really? They don't respect anyone who shows deference. They need someone to stand up to them. Is that person likely to become Prime Minister of Canada, whoever it might be?
I think it's going to be... What's successful here in Canada and has been successful in the past is when Canada, provincial governments, municipal governments, everybody kind of comes together and by show of force shows the Americans, look what you need us for critical minerals. You need us for all this cross-border trade. We are neighbors. We are cousins. Please find exception for us. And so that work's going to continue. Premiers of various provinces have been going down, meeting with their American counterparts. But I don't want to underestimate or understate how much of a challenge the negotiations over the next few months are going to be.
Now, I presume experts in Canada have been doing the numbers, and if there were to be 25% tariffs slapped on all goods which are going south, and what Canada's response would be for stuff coming in from the United States, what is the economic analysis of the impact of all of this?
So it would be devastating to a Canadian economy that's still coming out of sort of a COVID and a recession, dealing with affordability and housing issues here, to have that level of tariffs put onto consumer and other goods in Canada. We would need to retaliate. So I know that the finance department and the government is currently coming up with its list of retaliatory measures. And one thing that's going to have a big impact, I'm not sure the Americans have fully appreciated, is our ability to impact access to oil and gas and other sort of hydroelectric energy, other energy resources that flow back and forth, in addition to other critical minerals and natural resources. So it will be very painful for Canada, but it won't be without consequence to the United States consumer as well.
And finally, he's always talking about immigration and the southern border, and he also referred to Canada as a source of unwanted immigration into the United States. How true is that? I mean, how leaky is that border?
They are not in any way comparable situations at all. There is some flow. It's a huge border. It's not a perfectly sealed. There is no wall. But that being said, when I worked in the administration back in the first when Trump was president back in 2016, we would go down to Washington to complain that we had too many people leaking into Canada from the United States. So, you know, a porous border goes both ways. I think during the Biden administration, Trudeau and Biden made great strides in securing the northern border through an extension of the Safe Third Countries Act, which really closed up a bunch of other sort of ports of access. So, you know, there's things that can be done, but I think it's very dangerous to try and draw a comparison between what's happening in Mexico and the North. It's not comparable.
Well, Stevie, I can tell that Canada is unsettled, as indeed is most of the world, by the prospect of an unpredictable Donald Trump presidency. But Stevie, for the moment, thank you very much for joining us on the line. Stevie O'Brien, former government advisor and public policy specialist with reference to Canada.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.